Hey, everybody. This episode is a rebroadcast of one of my favorite interviews I've conducted so far on the show. I'll be mixing these best of episodes in with brand new interviews over the next few months. I encourage you to check them out if you're new to the show. And if you've been a longtime listener, side note, thank you. I encourage you to listen again, as you might just catch some insight you didn't before. Enjoy. Hi, I'm Sean. I've always been curious about the answers to life's big questions. I thought it would be cool to seek some of those answers through conversations with others on a similar path. My intention with these conversations is to inspire you to think bigger, to challenge what you believe to be possible. I'd like to invite you to think outside the lines. Hey, it's Sean, and I want to welcome you to the Think Outside the Lines podcast, where my objective is to bring you insightful conversations with thought leaders who are doing their part to make the world a better place. Now, I want to tell you about a couple of exciting things in the works. First up, I've just relaunched thinkoutsidethelines.com, which I'm pretty excited about, since I now offer virtual coaching, which gives me the opportunity to connect with and mentor people all over the world. And you can also learn more about me, about the podcast. We've also got some other cool stuff in the works over there, so be sure to head over and check it out. And if you aren't already, please follow me on Instagram. You can do that at Think Outside the Lines. It helps you stay up to date with all the latest guests and everything related to the show. And lastly, I'd love if you'd head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review for the show. I've got some amazing guests coming up, and the best way for new listeners to discover the show is for Apple to promote it. And they do this when a show receives great reviews in addition to streams and downloads. I want to thank you so much for your support. I'm super grateful to everyone who listens, and I'm excited to bring you some great content in the future. My guest today is a mental performance coach. Her emphasis is on the holistic perspective and the effect that the mind, body, and spirit have on our performance. We spent a lot of this episode talking about love and how loving yourself is the true key to happiness. It's one of my favorite interviews I've done so far, and I know you will find it inspiring. It's time to think outside the lines with my dear friend, Wilma Wong. Little bit of background. You and I have known each other a long time. And we have always connected on that level of like talking about the bigger questions in life, and not necessarily like, I don't think we've ever really had a surfacey conversation about surfacey things. We've always had very deep conversations, and I've always appreciated that about you.
So some of the work that I've been doing is, there was a guy named Lester Levinson, and he was given a death sentence basically because he had coronary thrombosis in the 1950s. So the doctor just didn't know what to do with him, and they basically told him to go home and to die. And so he goes home and he thinks about his life because he has nothing better to do. He's just basically sitting around. So he sat around in his apartment in New York, and he decided to analyze his life. And he was a physicist, so he had a very scientific mind. And he goes and he looks at his life. So, okay, so what makes people happy? And he thought about it, and he goes, well, my parents, my sisters, my brothers, they love me. Does that make me happy? No, he said no. You know, I know they love me and I'm still not happy. So he goes, okay, so what about when I'm loving and I'm loving my girlfriend? Well, that made me happy. How about like when my best friend was getting married and I was really happy for him? So he came to the conclusion that we suffer when we are wanting love. And when we give love, we set ourselves free and are happier. And so what he did was he went through every single moment in his life. Well, he has a lot of time. He had a lot of time because he was dying, right? So he sat in his apartment. And the more he reconfigured his life in which every moment where he was wanting love. So if you're angry, you're probably wanting love. If you're breaking up with somebody, you're wanting love. You feel rejected, you're wanting love. You're frustrated, you're probably wanting love. So almost everything, you're wanting love. And he changed it to giving love. And by changing the movie, by changing the situation, he was able to basically heal himself. He lived for another 40, 45 years. And the more he became loving, giving love to everything and every situation in his memory, and he literally could not stop walking. He had so much energy that he would just walk all night long because it energized him and set him free. And it was really amazing. So, and with that idea in mind, I started working with people, and it's particularly easier with people who have had children, or if you have a loving pet. Sean, do you have a pet that you love?
I do.
You have a dog, don't you?
Yep.
Yeah. And you love that pet unconditionally, right?
Oh, more than anything on the planet. Absolutely.
Yeah. So if you imagine your dog, what's your dog's name?
Cooper.
Cooper. Okay. So if you were to hold Cooper in your arms, maybe imagine him as a puppy or just imagine him now and feel that love heart to heart with Cooper. Can you imagine that?
Like, absolutely.
Yeah. So what I was doing with people was imagining that love for parents if they imagine their child in their arms when they were first born. Because people don't come out with unconditional love. Even parents. I mean, we love our children, but we yell at them too. So at the moment we're yelling at them, I don't think we're being unconditionally loving. But there are moments in time where the purity of our love for family members, our children, is just expansive, and it comes from the heart. And so what I've been having people do is to imagine that heart to heart with Cooper. Now imagine that love in your heart and imagine now holding baby infant Sean when you first came out with that same love. And to feel and imagine you're holding baby Sean in your arms and holding that love like you give Cooper, and fill yourself up in like a tank till you fill up. And what's happening with people is that I think when we come out of the womb, we're biologically programmed to want love. If we don't get love, we fail to thrive. There's failure to thrive syndrome. But I think as a spiritual being, we probably are beings of love. And so we come in to these bodies and we are beings of purity and love. And then we come into this physical form and then we're wanting love. And so the whole game on planet Earth is to get back to, which is our biological programming of wanting love, and instead of giving love. And the most important person you have to start with is yourself. So you fill up baby Sean with as much love as baby Sean can handle, and you will see that you will suddenly feel better. And been working with clients and doing this, and it's transformed people's lives.
I think there's something powerful there too, because I think all of us have things in our childhoods that didn't go perfectly, right? And we don't necessarily give that the attention and the type of attention that it deserves. Like, a lot of people reflect on their childhood for the wrong reasons and they blame their parents or they blame whatever, but like, no one's really to blame for that. It's just how life unfolded. But I think if you go back and you give love to that younger child that is you, and maybe you can elaborate on that even further, because I love the part about like baby you, but I think even child you is just as critical. Would you agree?
I think so. And whenever you are angry with somebody else, you're not really angry with that other person. You're really angry at yourself. And it goes back to usually a childhood memory or trauma or something. And so never blame the other person. You just got to go back into yourself. Okay, so where am I feeling it? Where am I feeling it in my body? Oh, hey, the first memory of it is when I was 3. That's the first memory. And you may not even know. It doesn't even matter. You don't even have to know the story. Just go and hold 3-year-old in your lap, in your arms, hug. And it sounds crazy, but it's like, you know, the masters are always talking, love yourself, be love.
But how do you do that?
Yeah. Most people don't know how to do it.
Absolutely. I agree with you. You hear that every day, especially like with all this new age stuff that's out there now. It's like, well, you have to love yourself before you can do anything else. And while I believe that, I think that a lot of people don't necessarily have the tools and resources to know, A, what that means, and B, how to execute it. And so that's why I love conversations like this, because you're actually like providing something useful to the world, I think.
Right. So it was, for me, the struggle was everybody would say, be love. I'm like, well, I can't be love. I'm angry, you know, or like I'm yelling at my kids sometimes. I'm human. And what happened is, okay, so if that's, say, my 3-year-old self or my 5-year-old self, or even my 20-year-old self, why don't I just give love to that person who was hurt and was wanting love and wanted love from a partner or a friend or feeling rejected? Just give love to that person. And then once you give love to that person and you're filled up, then giving love to other people is easy. It's really easy. So you just need to go and hug virtual you. And it's really that simple. I can't tell you how I've got stories of people who have just changed. It's like writing a screenplay. I know you've been writing some screenplays. And I had this one person who was abused and her father was chasing her with a horse whip. And I said, well, why don't you just rewrite the story? And I said, you're terrorized, so just turn around, look at your father with love. And she had already given her father love when she was 7 and he was dying and he never asked for it, but just looking into his eyes, she saw that she loved him. And so she said, I said, well, just change your story. Don't tell me your story the same way. Turn around. Don't be terrorized. Turn around. Look at your dad with the same love. And when she did that, she looked at her dad with eyes with love, and her dad dropped the horse whip in the new movie, right? The new script of life. And she saw him for who he really was. And that's the compassion everybody's trying to, the masters are all trying to tell us. But you can't be compassionate to other people if you don't love yourself. So she filled the 2-year-old with love, then saw her dad with love, gave him love, and she just burst into tears because it freed her from this script that had been going on in her head over and over again of being terrorized. And now it was a new way of looking at that story.
I want to talk about love because I think that is something like in my life personally, like that is, trust me, issues galore. but more importantly, there's things that I long to work through and things that I want to, you know, better myself so that I can be present for someone when they do come into my life again. And I haven't really, there's been no one, like everyone I talk to is like, I'm talking to entrepreneurs and I'm talking to people, you know, about like important things in life and spirituality and all those things, but love rarely comes up. And I'd been asking, I was like, you know what? I really want to have a conversation with someone about this. And I feel like there's no accident that we've kind of stumbled into this conversation right now because it's what I asked for.
Yeah, so, the universe gives you what you really want.
Absolutely, when you're intentional with it.
Yeah.
Or sometimes when you're not intentional too.
Exactly.
But I love that. And I'd like to kind of continue in this vein because I think that this is a conversation that like a lot of people, it's probably the biggest issue that people encounter in their life, right? It's love, whether it's, you know, relationships, whether it's dating, marriage, sex, whatever. Like love is the thing that fucks us up, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
So
ask
how
away.
Do you apply this? How do you apply this to, I guess, like a more romantic scenario? Like, I love the idea that, okay, so let's assume that you've done some of the work to love yourself more and you're in a good place, but, you know, then you meet someone and how do you proceed from there?
Well, I've been married for 20 years now? Almost 20 years. I don't know. I've known my husband 26 years. And there was a point where I really was annoyed with him. I go, oh, God. He's not changing.
I remember
and for
this.
Years I was complaining about he's not changing, he's not changing, he's not changing. And all the work I know is that whenever you're complaining about somebody, it's you. And whatever you're complaining about them, if they're not changing, then you're not changing. And I go, but it couldn't be. I'm a lifelong learner. I'm always changing. I'm doing everything to make my life better, smarter, faster. And I had to look, okay, so where in my life am I not changing? And I saw things. I finally had to admit I was being stubborn about not changing certain things. And as soon as I took responsibility for it, he changed and I didn't have to tell him. See, and it's the reality that we're creating. It's like hot button issues. When people show up in your life and are hot button issues, they're really, it's a reflection back at you of what that you're uncomfortable with and that you have not resolved within yourself. So it's never about them. And the greatest thing I can tell you, if in any relationship, and people consider, you know, I've been married a long time. A lot of people have not been married as long as I've been. Yeah, we're going on 20 years next year. So we're on year 19. But we've known each other for 26 years. So it's about, don't ever look at the other person to blame them. It's you. It's always you. Look inside yourself, because whatever is bugging you about the other person, it's really you. It's not an easy thing to do. And sometimes it takes time to actually figure it out, because no one wants to blame themselves. Oh, really? You know, that person is annoying because they do X, Y, Z. And in fact, you do X, Y, Z just in a slightly different form, but nobody wants to admit that they do it too.
Yeah. And I think what I love about what you just said is that it doesn't just, that does not just apply to love, that applies to life. So if you have a coworker that annoys the hell out of you, again, a spouse, a best friend, a not so best friend, whatever, like anything that happens throughout your day. And I have come to accept this in my life. And I think once you do accept this, literally everything in the world changes. Anything that comes out throughout your day that either is amazing or not so amazing is something that you've created. And there's a reason why it's happening to you, and you have to stop and reflect on why it's happening to you. And once you do that, whether it's the annoying coworker or the annoying spouse or whatever, why am I being affected by this? And
right,
you realize that they're reflecting something back in you.
Yeah, because whatever happens is that if you... You and I could be in the same room and a person could push every hot button on you, and I could just look at that other person and doesn't bother me at all. So we can see that it has nothing to do with that person. It has everything to do with what's inside of us.
What's the common denominator? Totally.
Yeah. It's hot, but it's within us. Yeah. Every single time.
So do you have any like strategies, tips, exercises that you use with people to kind of work through some of this stuff? Because yes, I think it's one thing to say, yeah, absolutely, I can acknowledge that now. But then you're actually in that moment where the person annoys you.
Oh, yeah.
You kind of lose sight of it.
For sure. If you're in the moment and they're live in front of you, you go, okay, so you just ask the question, where do I behave like this? And so the question is not, why do they behave like this? Because it's external, but it goes back internally. So like, where do I behave like this? And so it changes the dynamic of it. And then if they're not live with you and you're having the situation, write it down. I always have my clients write down everything. Okay, so what are you angry about? Write it down. Okay, well, what else are you angry about? And oftentimes what's really interesting is people think they're so angry and they can't write down more than 10 things. But because they leave it inside their head, it's floating around like a nuclear bomb cloud above their heads. And it gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And then when they finally write it down, put it on paper, it's really not that big. It's 5, 10, max, 14, 15. I barely ever get anybody to write 20 things wrong with people. And then you go write the opposite. Because whatever is annoying you about them, you write the opposite. And what's interesting about what's the opposite, it'll actually show your values. So let's give an example. So if they are for like my husband, I was like, oh, he doesn't change. I'll say, so what do I value? I value change. So then I go, oh, so if I value change, you begin to see what you value in your life. You begin to see the traits, because everything that's annoying you about the other person is actually what you value about yourself. They're not living up to your values, but then it's a reflection back at you. So now you have clarity, like, this is who I really am. And then it also gives you a reflection back and saying, oh, and then I'm not fully living up to my own values. It's really fascinating to do.
That's really fascinating. So what do you do when, let's give a hypothetical situation, and by hypothetical, I mean last year for me, someone comes into your life, you know they're absolutely wrong for you, but there's a part of you that sees it as an opportunity to learn and grow from this person, because you know that there's so many things that they're going to teach you, and there's so many things that they're going to reflect back to you that you need to work on. But deep in your heart, you know ultimately it's just not the person you're meant to be with ultimately. what can you do in that scenario to not go crazy?
Well, you know, to not go crazy is for everything in life, right? I think, again, you would just write down, like, what are the benefits of my knowing this person? Yeah, I know they're not going to be here forever, but what can I learn? And I think that where we go with this is when you can get to the point where you have grace and gratitude in your heart, where you've written down so many things. You have written down, if you have 10 things that annoy you about a person and you have 50 things that you're grateful for and you learn from them, then that ratio is much better than 1-to-1. So, like, instead of having 10 things annoyed by them and 10 things you learn from them, how about 10 things you're annoyed with them and 50 things you learn from them? And when you get to that point where you have grace and gratitude in your heart, that you feel so grateful for this person coming into your life as a teacher, then you're done. But for most people, what happens is their list of annoyances is maybe 10, and their list of gratitude is maybe 1.
Yep.
And then they remain in anger. If your angry list is about 10 and your grateful list is about 10, then you're just probably about equal, and maybe, and that's like a pro and cons list, and that's about maybe equanimity, but it's not to gratitude yet. When you get to the point where your anger list is 10 and your grateful list is like 20, 30, 40, 50, then you can begin to see them for showing up in your life as a teacher. And even when they have been so-called bad to you, they're not really bad to you. You really finally see them for how much you grew from being in their presence.
Woman Wong, you are so wise. I'm gonna have you on. I'm gonna have you on the show like once a month, and we're gonna have these talks. I think so. I kind of want to bring this full circle, because from my perspective, yes, there's been people that have come into my life that necessarily were not good for me, whether it's exes, whether it's former friends, you know, coworkers, bosses, whatever. When you are at a place where you can send that person love and be grateful for what they brought into your life, for better or worse, good or bad, whatever, that changes the landscape in a way that is so powerful. And I know that a lot of people think that they're incapable of getting there. And there may be some people listening right now who think that there's no way I could ever love that person, or, you know, love them for what they did to me, or forgive them, or whatever. But when you're able to do that, the release that comes with that and the ability to let go that comes with that is so profound, and it's so amazing. And, you know, to kind of circle back to my situation last year, it took me a very long time to get there with this particular individual because I just felt so betrayed and so hurt. But once I did kind of what you suggested and I reflected on, you know, all of the good things that this person brought to my life and all of the things that this person taught me ultimately, and I just became so grateful, and I realized, wow, like, this person is one of the greatest teachers I've ever had in my life. How can I not be grateful for that?
Yeah. And then when you can get into your mind where you can actually virtually hug them, because sometimes people are gone or they pass away and they're not in your life anymore, and you can get there and give heart-to-heart love, you know you're done. And you can feel just peace and gratitude for your experiences with them.
Now, what are your thoughts? Because you use the word done, and I don't necessarily know that you're ever done with someone that has that big of an impact on your life. I think that maybe you've completed the relationship in a lot of ways, but I think that that person will always be a part of your soul and a part of, you know, your presence. Their presence will always be felt in your life.
What I mean by done is it's no longer a hot button issue for you.
Correct. And I totally get that. But what are some techniques that you can maybe use to, when that does surface from time to time and those memories do come up, that you can, do you see where I'm going with this? Like, cause they're going to come up again, right? This person, a song's going to come on. There's going to be, you drive by somewhere that you used to hang out together. Like, something's going to come up where it triggers a memory. And for a second, even if it's just a split second, you are back in that emotion again, right?
Right. That to me means you're not done.
Really? Like,
no, seriously. Yeah. I think that if that is still lingering, then there is something that hasn't been resolved.
Shit. Then I'm not done.
Yeah. 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 Probably not. Yeah. Bad news, right? But the good news is, you know, you now know. So, because here's the thing, like, if you work with people who are grieving, like, I once worked with this guy who was grieving for his partner who had died, and for a year he was crying, and I said, okay, finally, you know, it's enough. Let's stop. So let's work on this. And I said, so what annoyed you about him? I always start there because usually people have a list. He had no list. His list was, no, he was perfect. What do you mean? Nobody's perfect. I said, did he fart? I mean, come on, nobody's perfect. Did, you know, like, he really was. He was like a saint. He was way better than I was as a human being. And I, the only thing, so finally, after much prodding, he said, okay, all right. He was an aggressive driver. Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. And then as I got, you know, oh, and he left me out of the will. He didn't put my name on it. And I go, this is your partner. He didn't
That's
put
a pretty
you on
big
the
deal.
Will? It was astounding, Sean. I mean, I just couldn't believe it. Okay, so what else? So first he started out perfect. And this is what happens in the mind. We make these fantasies where we turn these people into perfect people, even though they were not that nice to us, or there are moments when they were not that nice to us. But in our grief, sometimes we think we turn them into gods or something. And so what happens is we have this fantasy of what people were like, but that's not the reality. And so finally, when I got him to admit that he had things that were not so nice, and we made it. So now in this case, this guy had 20 things that he loved about this guy and zero that he was angry about, which was not true at all. And they're just imbalances in perceptions of thinking. And so what happened was we finally balanced it and he stopped crying.
Here's the thing. I want to know, because I love all of that stuff. And I really do actually like the idea of incorporating some of like the anger and the annoyances into this. But how then do you come back and reconcile that with, I need to send them love and peace in order for me to be at peace?
Right. So if you first do that, you kind of equilibrate it so that you are no longer having a hot button issue. And then you go, you close your eyes and you go, okay, where in my life, early in my life, where this sort of reminds me of a time where I felt the same kind of tension in regards to some person. And then you feel it and you go, and the first thing that comes to your mind, you can't overthink it. Literally, your mind is like a computer archive. And it goes, boom, oh, when I was 3 years old and I was sitting on the swing and Bobby Joe came and slugged me. And this where these weird memories will come up. And then you go, okay, so then you go and maybe you hug 3-year-old Sean for wanting love from Bobby Joe. But you got slugged instead, and you just take care of that kid until they feel fully like a gas tank full of love. And sometimes you're gonna have to ask this: are you done, or do you want to work on? You know, you ask that kid, is there something else you want to be heard about? And they'll keep telling you, oh well, you know, I wanted Bobby Joe to be nicer to me, okay, and I just wanted to be heard, and I wanted to be loved, and then at some point, people quiet down, the kid inside you quiets down, and you can sit peacefully with that person, that little kid inside of you, and just be love and give love, and once you're full of love, then you can take that love from the 3-year-old and give it back out to your partner or whoever else you're angry about or with.
Interesting. What do you do when you, like, for me, for example, and I don't mean to turn this into a therapy session, it's kind of becoming that, so thank you. What do you do then when you don't necessarily, like, I don't remember a lot of my childhood. So it's hard for me to kind of delve back into the archives, if you will,
yeah.
and say like, yeah, 3-year-old Sean, I have no idea what he was feeling because I genuinely don't remember a lot of my childhood. So do you just start from like your earliest memory?
Yeah. And you just get a feeling, ah, I'm like 1 or 2. Great. You don't even have to know what it is. Just go and hold on to 1 or 2-year-old Sean. And it's literally that simple. I just feel the more I work with people on giving love and instead of wanting love, it transforms their lives. I can tell you this much. It has made me a happier person and stop some of the neural networks of habits and reactions. And I'll tell you a story. My daughter, who's a teenager, and she's a lovely kid, but sometimes I lose it for no other reason that it's a habit. It's not even real. So she spilled something in the car and I started to react and started to yell because it was like a knee-jerk reaction. And the funny thing was I was yelling and I noticed that the yelling wasn't as loud nor was it as intense nor could I wasn't even into yet. I just couldn't even get myself to get the volume up and everything. And suddenly I stopped. I go, what am I doing? Why am I even bothering? And I talked to her the next day and she goes, oh yeah, it was really weird because all of a sudden you stopped in the midstream and you stopped. And I was expecting it to go a lot longer. And she goes, you're changing.
Wow. That's powerful when your kid recognizes that.
Right. And it really was a neural network pattern. It went back to my mom probably yelling at me, frustrated with me for doing something wrong. And I just picked it up. This is not a conscious thing. It like was a knee-jerk reaction built into my neural network. I had no control.
So are you saying that all of this happened when you just kind of stopped in that moment and loved your 3-year-old self?
And then it was already, because I had already done, I had loved my infant self. And I think just doing that alone brought me to be able to be aware enough to stop midstream of a potential tirade.
So it's fascinating to me because, again, I hear a lot of stuff about like loving your younger self. I've never heard the infant self because there's things that happen like in childhood, whether it's, you know, and I'm blaming your parents is so 1980s. I think it's like, you know, you can blame everybody you want to. There's kids in school that didn't like you or whatever. But at the end of the day, like you feel the way you feel, right?
Yeah.
And you have to move forward. But this whole hearing the like the infant love, the infant self is a brand new concept to me that I'm particularly fascinated by, I guess.
Yeah. I think because listen, when we come out of the womb, we literally are whisked away and bright lights and it's traumatic.
Right?
Yeah. And they poke you with stuff. They needle you. They do all kinds of stuff. It's traumatic. And people say they can't remember, but some people do. There are people out there that actually can remember this
stuff.
Really? I'm not one of them. I am not.
Wow.
I think back in the day when I was born, they used to put people under full anesthesia and then pull them out with like forceps or something. And though that was a traumatic, those are traumatic experiences as well. So if we're wanting love and we're being thrust around in the world and slapped on the ass and being like in bright lights, it's not a very easy coming out. And so most of us, honestly, are traumatized because all we want is our mom's love and we're being manhandled. Really? It's true.
Metaphor for life right here. Here we go. I love it.
See, and that's it. We are coming out of the womb wanting love and we're not getting it.
God damn, I didn't realize it started that early. Well, that's comforting at least.
Listen, I've even done it at the point of conception, and that is actually wild too.
Yeah, that's
because
pretty crazy.
Even think about the sperm going into the egg. I mean, this is not it is not a loving thing. This is, it's almost like it's competition to get to the prize.
Wow. Yeah, that's a whole nother episode, Wilma.
It is. But start with the infant, because you know what? Most people can love babies. It's like puppies. How can you not love a puppy? They're adorable.
There's no way. For me, it's any sort of dog. You bring it into my realm and I am instantly in love with it. So,
but puppies.
Totally.
Are licking you and romping around and happy. And there's this joyous quality to puppies that you can't help but love them. I mean, they have puppy therapy at Stanford. They have, to relieve the pressure from the college students, they have puppy therapy. They put them in rooms full of puppies.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, that's probably a whole nother episode too, but I feel like dogs, and yes, puppies, of course, but like just dogs in general, I think there's something so amazing about the way that we connect with them as human beings, because there's no logical reason, I guess, why we should.
Because they give us unconditional love.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to get to. They do. They love us unconditionally. Like, my dog comes home and it doesn't matter what happened to me that day. It doesn't matter if I was an asshole out in the world. It doesn't, you know, whatever. He loves me unconditionally. And there is something so profound about that love that I think is deeper than human love at times. Because humans, we judge each other and we love each other. But it's like, oh, well, I only love you if this, you know. But dogs just come home and, like, to your point, they lick you, they kiss you, they will cuddle with you, like, whatever you need, they're just at your disposal. And it's consistent day after day. And there's something just, from my perspective, so magical about that. And I love the idea of animal therapy, especially dogs, especially puppies, whatever, because, there's nothing like the love of an animal. I mean,
right? And if we could be more dog-like, or doggo,
how would the world be?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, if only we had to shut up and not communicate with each other verbally. I think that would change a lot of things, too.
Right. We just lick people.
Again, Wilma, another episode. So I want to talk a little bit about what you're doing right now, because I do think it's important work that you're out there doing. You talk a lot about, like, the mind, body, and spirit connection and how that kind of impacts us as human beings. Can you kind of elaborate on the work that you're doing as it pertains to that?
Yeah. Where I'm going with a lot of people, I'm working with a lot of people who are very big thinkers. They're using their mind probably a little bit too much.
Story of my life.
Right. And I think, so I was even listening to a broadcast from Tim Ferriss where he said, you know, I would like to learn to use my intuition. And I think that's where I'm a big thinker too, but I've actually learned to use my intuition to navigate the world and to trust my intuition, to train myself. It wasn't easy to train myself and to train my clients to learn to trust their intuition. And it's not instantaneous, but you get to the point where you are listening and surrendering to something that's greater than yourself. And that's so hard when we're taught, particularly in this country, to be masters and destiny, you know, the captains of our destiny in this country, especially for the entrepreneur, right? For the entrepreneur, you are trying to make things happen. And sometimes you're bombarded, especially if you're a startup or a new company, got a lot of decisions to make, and it's too much. It's overwhelming. And what we need to learn to do is to listen to ourselves and to trust our intuition and to trust that we know what we really want amidst the noise and the chaos.
Can you talk a bit about the idea of, just in general, of in 2016 challenging the status quo? And how you see people starting to do that, but more importantly, how it pertains to what you're doing and how you help people kind of evolve into that consciousness of you can really get whatever it is that you want in life.
Well, the status quo is frankly boring, and there's a lot of, especially in the tech world, there's a lot of people talk about disruptions and if you're going to be a disruptor and an innovator and to move into those lines of thinking. And what it's exciting, actually. It's exciting to go out in the world and solve problems where why should we do it this way anymore? I mean, I remember when I was working in the movie business and on a television show. And each episode, I said, well, you know, I really didn't want to be there every day and work 14-hour days. And I had a young family at the time, young kids. And I said, well, how about we do every other episode and I give another person a job as well and share the job with them and we can both make great money and still have time in our lives. I mean, I thought it was an amazing solution. We were able to do that for a little bit, but back to the status quo, people weren't comfortable with having a new way of doing business. But I thought it was a win-win. Everybody got to get their money, get their hours, and still have a life.
What a concept.
Yeah, I think that what we're trying to do, honestly, as entrepreneurs is to, especially the new entrepreneur, I think we don't want to work 24 hours, 7 days a week. And you can as an entrepreneur, but that's not. I think we are now looking at being a lifestyle entrepreneur.
Yes, that's exactly it. Because it's not that we don't want to work. We want to contribute. We don't want it to feel like work. And that is considered wrong by a lot of people in society. It's like, no, you have to work really hard and then you have to like for 40 years and then maybe you get a retirement. Like that's what people are conditioned to believe. And I think that you're starting to see people dispel that myth and it's freaking people out.
Well, I plan on living to about 150.
Me too.
So if it's 150, I've lived less than a third of my life and I got over 100 years more to go. So with that kind of thinking, we have to, and there's no such thing as retiring at this point. It's not because I can't afford to retire. It's more because I am a lifelong learner and that I will constantly be evolving and learning and moving. And that's what makes me get up in the morning. And I think for a lot of entrepreneurs, if you don't love what you do, then it's going to be hard to keep it going for a legacy of a lifetime.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's funny that you say that. You talk about getting older because I was having a conversation with someone the other day that was basically like talking about their grandparents and how it's like, oh, well, they're old. You know, they don't necessarily need to be doing that or they can't do that anymore. And I was like, I would challenge that person immediately. And I said, no, that's completely not true. There's people out there in their 90s that are still thriving and loving their life. And I hate when people make excuses like that, because it's one thing if you have like a serious medical condition and you can't get out of bed, of course, like that is a challenge, right? And you're confined to that. But if you don't and you're just old, so what? Like old is relative, right? There's
right.
people that
well,
are 30 years old that are think they're old.
Exactly right. They hit 29. They go, oh my gosh, I'm old. My grandmother lived to 103 years old. At 100, she decided she no longer wanted to live with my parents, and she was going to get her own apartment and become independent. And she was still learning to read. Bless her heart, she's reading the same book over and over again. But she was still going to learn English. But she was very excited to keep learning. And that spirit to just keep doing that was inspiring. That woman, she talked about birth. She was a OB-GYN. She was OB, the first one in China to have a Western degree in medicine. And she delivered 10,000 babies in 10 years. And
wow.
But during war, she was not able to become a doctor because she came to the U.S. and she became a barmaid and she never practiced medicine ever again. But she was a living example of how she had great equanimity. She was also always looking at the bright side. She goes, I can eat hamburgers. I can eat rice. I'm going to be happy no matter what. It's this, honestly, that is the key to living over 100.
Totally. You hear stories every day of people like, I try to be mindful of what I eat, but you know what? Once in a while, I just want a cheeseburger. I just want a candy bar or ice cream or whatever. And it's like, I'm not going to deny myself that. And you hear stories all the time of like this people that live to be 103 or 100 and whatever. And it's like, well, what's your secret to good health? And they're like, oh, well, I have a fucking Dr. Pepper every day. And it's like, good for you. You know what I'm saying? Like, so I love that. I love that so much because there's really no rules to life.
Except for if you want a long life, be grateful. Really. It's really that simple. You want along, because the people who have cancer, and a lot of my coaching clients prior to me heading into elite performance athletes, they were cancer patients, and they had a hard view of life, and many of them were angry, and they didn't even realize what they were angry about. Cancer is an anger disease in general, and depending on where your cancer is, it kind of tells you where you're holding your sorrows and your anger. And what I've learned over the time is that if you don't process your anger, it literally eats you away. That's what is cancer. Cancer is something that eats at you, and the metaphor is it's going to eat your body away. If you don't deal with the anger, it's not a good thing. It really isn't.
Well, I want to know, how do you define success?
Success is being fulfilled in whatever you do. It has nothing to do with money, because, you know, there's so many people who have money and are unhappy and they want to kill themselves. And then there are people who don't have money and are more fulfilled with their lives. So I define success is, are you doing what you want to do, and are you fulfilled at it? And if you're not, then go out there, figure out what you really want to do, and make it happen, because dreams and are inspiring to us. And if you're not living to your own inspiration, then you're wasting your life.
Tell me what you think or hope the world looks like 5 years from now.
I would love, seeing that I'm from LA, maybe this is a fantasy, but we're getting close. I'd love to see some cars that are like hovercrafts. I'm a sci-fi junkie. I used to be a Star Trek lover.
Dying laughing right now, because we spent this whole time talking about like metaphysical, spiritual stuff, and you're just like straight to like, you know what? I'm ready for the fucking hover car.
Yeah. Listen, I think we can do a lot with our minds, but it sounds like a lot of fun to be able to, go to the moon and go to Mars. I think what Elon Musk is doing is fantastic. I actually saw Spaceship One when it was when the XPRIZE was going, and that was a lot of fun, a lot of excitement. And I know that we're going to find probably some sort of other life out there. It's statistically impossible that we could be the only planet on this entire universe and galaxies that we're the only people here. And it's just, well, maybe they're only humans, but there is probably sentient life out there. And hopefully within 5 years, we finally can prove that. That would be fun. Because that would change the philosophy of our Earth, and it might change the way we view God and religion, because if we know there's something else out there and now it's proven, and hopefully they're kind and friendly people, and if that's the case, then it would probably change the paradigm of how we function on this Earth, and we might actually be kinder to each other because we can unite together to greet other species that's out there.
There you go. That's the big answer I was looking for. What do you hope will be your legacy?
Well, right now, my legacy are my children. And I see myself being, as I coach more and more people, I feel like, oh, now I got more kids. I mean, I originally wanted 6 kids like the Brady Bunch, but I only got 2. And but I don't feel like I have 2 anymore, because every client that I take on feels like a new child, and it's wonderful to watch and nurture, and hopefully those people will help other people become more fulfilled human beings, and we can all just be happier, fulfilled people.
Tell us about how we can connect with you on the web, and I think you also are offering something special to our listeners.
Right. So you can contact me at wilmawong.com. And if you type in, I have a weird way of doing it, just to sort of like weed out people. You have to fill out that form online, and then write in how you heard about me. You could do either OTL in the subject line, or you could say Sean Feeney. And from there, it's an offer for a coaching package for $555, and it's a lot. It's usually I charge $1,000 a month, but it's very high touch, and I hopefully won't have you as a client forever. I hope you have you as a friend forever, but as a client, hopefully you'll be on your feet and moving in 3 months or so. And but you get 2.5 or 1.5 hours to 2 hours of initial conversation to just get to know each other. And then sometimes with people, depending on what project you want completed, sometimes I'll hold your hand. And for example, I have a client that I'm holding her hand in meditation right now because it's so hard for her. She is so busy. She's an executive, and holding her hand just to meditate for 5 minutes, five little minutes. I call her up at 5:45 in the morning, and I hold her hand. And the reason I do this is because people sometimes need that support, just somebody else to be there with them while they're doing something that's hard, that they perceive as hard and are resisting. And holding that space and just being with them gets people to do the work. And I've seen so much good things happen to them. So with that $555 for the month, you can I will handhold you on certain things if whatever needs to be done. And then, you know, we'll talk once a week, and then daily we'll text, and it's a lot of fun. And I love watching people grow.
Wow, that's amazing. Thank you. That's really cool. You're giving people like almost half off your services, which I think anyone that's listened to this conversation today knows that there's got to be some sort of value in that. So a million thank yous. And again, I thank you so much for coming on the show. I always love our conversations, and I hope that you will come back again.
Thanks, Sean.
All right, I'd like to thank you so much for listening today. Now, if you're enjoying the show, please subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts, as it's the best way to discover new episodes of the show. And please be sure to share this episode with anyone you think could benefit from hearing it. Now, you can find the links for everything we talk about in the show notes, in addition to coaching services and so much more. Just head over to thinkoutsidethelines.com. And feel free to drop me a line with any questions or feedback you have on the show. You can send an email anytime to hello@thinkoutsidethelines.com. Until next time, go out there and pursue your passion today, because the best way to predict the future is to create it. For more information, please visit thinkoutsidethelines.com.